All right, now we're going to be transitioning into a cybersecurity update. I'm just going to give 1 minute to Julio, Reed, and Tara as they prepare for that. And just some announcements. Your restrooms are here out in the left. Some people were asking me about the website. If you do press on your member category, so if you're a CPO, you would press on CPO, and then you go under resources. That's where you'll find the slides for today, if you were wondering.
He's got it. So, good morning. I'd like to thank everybody for coming out today. My name is Julio Reed. I am the Cybersecurity Compliance Manager for both the New York and Chicago offices and for the futures as well as the OTC swaps area.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tara Birbal, and I am a manager in examinations in our New York office. And I oversee our exams of our CPO, CTA, and IB registrants.
So Tara and I will be covering the cybersecurity area. As some of our other colleagues have stated before, if you have any questions, feel free to ask. If there are any particular topics you would like to discuss in greater detail, Tara and I will also be available after our session to discuss in more detail. So with that, we have a lot to cover. We'll get started. So the topics that we'll be covering in our sessions include the interpretive notices 9070 and 9079, since the parallel themes related to them, common exam findings, which Tara will cover in greater detail, cyber industry threats and breaches that I will cover in detail, as well as member incidents and response. So the definition of cybersecurity. Well, the industry definition of cybersecurity is that the prevention and protection of information and systems from unauthorized access. As it relates to NFA, it's more of in relation to the definition that you see up there. It's in relation to protection of investor and firm information from technology systems, computer mobile devices, and internet communication systems. Now, you're probably wondering why the "and prevention of" is highlighted. That's because, from an industry perspective, we're seeing that more businesses are putting greater emphasis on that particular area. Not to say that that diminishes protection, but prevention is becoming more and more of a greater area that's to be considered. Some examples of prevention includes multi-factor authentication, information system security policies, cloud technology. Areas related to protection will be like encryption and cloud technology. We'll discuss some of these areas in greater detail as we go along in our session. So, without protection and prevention, what will likely happen? There could be a compromise of systems. And the compromise of systems could be in relation to any of the three or a combination of the three: confidentiality of data as well as availability. From our regulatory standpoint, we focus our cyber examinations specifically to the areas of the businesses as stated up there. Recently, the SEC has recently updated their operation resiliency to now include transfer agents for their update. And this is a recent update from the last initial rollout of their operation resiliency, which was back in 2000. Within NFA, we actually look for these activities to be provided for the business areas as well in relation to trading system, trading strategies, and proprietary software and code. So, our interpretive 9070. Basically, our interpretive 9070 is a risk process in which we look for our members to follow certain technology risk practices. This ranges from areas related to change management, asset management, software and code encryption, as well as password management. It applies to all NFA member categories. One area that we look for, as stated from some of our colleagues, is that it is to be a written documented policy. And it is to be approved in writing by either the CEO or chief technology officer or chief security officer that has been delegated by the CEO. The interpretive provides an overview and guidance regarding how to put together an information security policy. It provides all the detailed necessary information that's needed in order for a firm to put together a document that outlines what is their safeguards and security controls that's in place related to their assets. We recognize that a number of our members actually leverage this activity to some third parties as well. And while I'm not going to go into too much detail related to a third party that was actually already covered by my colleagues, we look for some of our members to extend what the requirements are for our interpreters to some of those third parties. And for the most part, we recognize a number of those third parties out there recognizing some of our requirements within our interpretive. There's a number of third parties out there, and two in particular that actually are utilized in great detail. I'm not going to give too much marketing to them. One starts with a G and has an extensive search engine, and the other one starts with an A, and it's related to the description of multiple rainforests nationwide or globally. So we recognize that most of these third-party vendors already recognize from an industry standpoint some of the requirements as well as the requirements related to the area related to technology industry of information systems and cybersecurity. So I'm going to go on to the next slide where Tara can go into detail on that.
Right, so some common exam findings. So the first would be a lack of documentation when it comes to your plan, and Julio mentioned this before. No matter how large or how small your firm is, you need a written plan. The plan must also be approved in writing by senior management and other appropriate personnel, and the approval, again, must be in writing. The plan must also be reviewed on an annual basis, and there should be documentation of the review as well. Another common finding we see is a lack of appropriate security measures. Like Julio mentioned before, these are encryption, you know, password protection, and multi-factor authentication. Another one we see is non-enforced cyber training. So firms should ensure that all employees are taking cyber training on an annual basis, so they are aware of the cyber risks at the firm and how to avoid them. Training should also be taken promptly upon hire for any new hires. A lot of times we'll see or come across firms that will outsource or use a vendor to complete the training. A lot of times the vendors will also issue a certificate at the completion. So you want to make sure that you are keeping track of all of those certificates for your employees. We'll also see logs that are produced by vendors with the individual names as well as the started date and the completion date. You want to make sure your employees are not only starting the training, but they are also completing the training. Another common finding we see is firms not performing an assessment of threats posed by critical third parties. So any third parties that have access or, you know, house sensitive information for you, you should be doing some sort of due diligence. And we touch upon this a little bit with our TPSP interp as well. And lastly, a common finding is insufficient incident response plans. So incident response plans should be able to detect incidents. They should be able to analyze their potential impact on the firm and take appropriate measures to mitigate or contain the incident. Firms should consider, creating an incident response team that will investigate the incident and take all the appropriate measures when communicating or coordinating a response with external parties and internal parties. External parties include customers, counterparties, regulators, law enforcement. And later on in the presentation, we'll go through what triggers notification of an incident to the NFA.
So, in regards to some of the common findings that was referenced by Tara, some of the actual remediation activities that was applied for some of these findings are listed as above. Some of them incorporates consistent system monitoring. In most instances, most firms actually will outsource this activity. However, for some of the smaller firms, we recognize that system monitoring is something that they probably won't pay too much attention on. If you are outsourcing this activity to a third party, we recommend that you meet quarterly or do various checkpoints at your convenience where you are ensuring that the third party vendor are actually catching certain activities. We're finding that a number of our members are actually outsourcing this, and once they outsource it, they just forget about it. Blocking outbound emails with PII. This is an area that's given somewhat consideration where we're seeing that a lot of firms who are sending any kind of critical information or PII information, it's ideal to have some filter in place that actually will flag that and possibly put it into some form of a queue where it can be reviewed to confirm that the information is safe to be sent, as well as the receiver is a authorized receiver of that information. Authentication, zero trust. This is becoming an area that is growing momentum in the cyber industry area. Basically, zero trust states that any area that requires some sensitive or critical information requires an additional authentication other than your desktop logon authentication. We're seeing certain tools such as single sign-on, multi-factor authentication, or two-factor authentication being leveraged in regards to utilizing this feature. As I stated, multi-factor authentication is one of the main areas that we're seeing more and more firms leveraging. In today's day and age, most of the technology that's out there actually has multi-factor or two-factor authentication capabilities that is inherent in the program or the application itself. We stress that a lot of members actually do some form of assessment or risk assessment to leverage that against any kind of particular data that is considered PII or critical information. Protecting PII, encryption when sharing critical information. This is key in regards to any information that you're sending outbound to any third party or any affiliates that's out there. We recognize that some information is processed in large volumes on a daily basis. There should be a process in place where certain information actually goes through a stop check to verify that the information contains some critical information and that if that critical information is encrypted in some regards before it is sent out. And last, sharing through a VPN. This is pretty much the most common area that we're seeing a lot of members utilizing now because of the change in technology. Oftentimes, once you log into your desktop, there is a particular application that you probably utilize for any other third parties or any customers that's utilizing your business activity where you actually have to log in and authenticate, and it creates a dedicated VPN area. This is an ideal setup where the area set up where it's an encrypted tunnel where any intruders or outsiders cannot gain access. So some of the common industry breaches that's out there. We're seeing from a cyber industry standpoint, these particular common areas that's being utilized and gaining popularity in the cyber area. Phishing is basically, phishing links that is fraudulent links that is sent throughout to various emails. Vishing is an area that is actually gaining momentum where you actually are receiving fraudulent voicemail messages requesting you to either send money or contact a person immediately with certain level of urgency. And submission is a text message where we'll probably receive saying that, hey, the bank, such and such bank, states that you have an overdraft fee. You need to click on this embedded link to gain access to detail related to this fraudulent or overdraft that's in place. This also is a fraudulent activity that's actually gaining momentum in the cyber area as well. Ransomware, goes without saying, is increasing. Over the past 3 years, ransomware has increased 15%. And that's basically because the attackers are actually leveraging, as my colleagues, as Derek has stated, that AI is becoming more and more of a popular tool for the attackers to use in ransomware attacks. The AI platform enables the attackers to create more sophisticated and intriguing ransomware messages that is sent out to members or businesses. That being said, the good news is that existing controls that are in place and that we leverage within our Interpretive 9070 still applies. However, it is important that it should be leveraged and updated periodically to ensure those activities are not kept, or not those kind of breaches do not occur within your members' organizations. Distributed denial of service attacks are basically attacks where the attacker sends out a message or an encoded code to bring down your system. This isn't really done in regards to gain any funds of any sort from the member firms, but to more disable the firms from preventing any kind of business operation going forward. System monitoring is ideal to leverage against certain distributed denial of services where if you see an uptick in certain volume of performance of activities of servers or applications, is a basically indication of the distributed denial of service. User account password attack, or basically what's out there now known as backdrops. Basically, this activity is when attackers go in and they actually create a fraudulent bank account with a bank. And they will then send an email, a phishing email, or a smishing text to your phone stating that you need to make a transfer, the last transfer that you made from a wire transfer did not execute, and that you are to click on this link to execute it. If you click on the link, what would happen is that there will be a transfer made for the attacker to gain access into your environment, thereby gaining him or her access to any kind of accounts within your organizations. And from there, they will communicate with the bank directly to request any further wire transfers and deposits into that fraudulent account. This particular kind of attack is also gaining popularity, more so in fraudulent wire transfer activities. The best method against certain activities of this nature is having a maker-checker process in place, strong supervision in regards to wire transfer activities. Thereby, you don't go through a rubber stamping process of executing wire transfer without recognizing a change in the recipient's email address or a change in the recipient's account number that it's secondarily verified by another person to ensure that this is a valid destination the wire is to be sent to. Third-party attacks, cloud-based vendors, and artificial intelligence. I'm not going to go into too much detail, as was already discussed from my colleague, Derek, that AI attacks are gaining momentum, and there are even attacking cloud providers. Yes, those vendors I referenced earlier are constantly being attacked by AI bad actors in regards to gaining access. In regards to our members, we want to make sure that if you're contracting with these third-party vendors or any third-party vendors, that the third-party vendors outlined within the statement of works, service level agreements, or master contracts, contingency plans, and existing controls in place, and it's noted within the contracts. Thereby, if there is any breach, it is stated within the contract that they actually have remediation activities or disaster recovery and business continuity processes in place to address it. industry lessons learned. Some of these lessons learned from some of the industry major breaches that I just referenced are listed above, and some of these that we've actually already discussed in detail. Security event monitoring is gaining more momentum because we're seeing a number of firms who are actually using, utilizing sophisticated security event monitoring practices in order to identify certain threats. Ongoing training and awareness, as Tara has stated earlier, that it is one of the key areas that is a strong preventive maintenance against any cyber attacks. And some of the other data law prevention safeguards I had stated earlier.
All right, so firms are required to file notice of a cyber incident if any of the following are met. So if there is any loss of customer or counterparty funds, any loss of the member's own capital, or if the member is providing notice to customers or counterparties under any other state or federal law. So I'd want to note that not all three of the circumstances need to be met in order for you to file. Any one of these conditions, you must file notice. So this slide goes into some of the common incidents we've seen reported in the past. So Julio kind of covered what each of these incidents are. They include ransomware, social engineering, phishing attacks. And I just want to give an example so what this can look like at a firm. So we once received a notification of a firm which experienced a cyber attack, a phishing email, and the email was spoofed. The bad actor was posing as a trusted third party who the firm had interacted with before. So they were very comfortable, and they ended up sending or wiring money out to this third party. So if you do have a cyber incident, obviously remember to employ and execute your cyber plan or your response plan. Notify your banks, engage counsel if you feel necessary. You should also consider, hiring a third party to investigate the incident, provide you details on where there was a breach, why, and hopefully provide some lessons learned. Notify regulators, counterparties, customers, law enforcement. And lastly, if you have an insurance policy which covers cyber-related events, you should notify them as well.
And I will also add, if you're contacting any of the state regulatory or any of the other federal regulatory areas, that you will also include NFA in those contacts as well. Normally, sometimes our members will contact specific regulators or state regulators depending on the nature of the breach. It's ideal to just contact all regulators that you contract with. So with that, is there any other questions?
The first question is with the single sign-on. Is that something that is, I didn't hear what you were saying. Is it okay or is it?
Single sign-on is actually one of the ideal Zero Trust authentication to use. It's basically an additional authentication process other than your desktop login, and it's usually levied against certain data or information that is considered PII or critical information.
And the second question is with the incident response. So last year, it seemed like a long time ago, but that CrowdStrike thing, was that something that, I went through the procedures of what happened. We were down for a day, but that does not need to be reported, right?
Well, that was specific to the vendor CrowdStrike themselves, correct? And if you're contracting with them, CrowdStrike will most likely give you instructions on what you need to do from your end, but it's specific. It was targeted towards them, so that's something you don't really need to contact us.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yeah. Thank you. Hi. So you mentioned that one deficiency you see is annual training not showing up. Is cybersecurity being included in an annual training enough with supplementary micro-learning, let's say, instead of a full cyber training? Or are you looking for something separate from regular compliance training?
So for cybersecurity training, we're looking for all staff members of the members firm to go through cybersecurity training on an annual basis. That being everyone ranging from the administrators all the way to the CEOs. Keep in mind that these are personnel who actually access the in-office email, and that it's ideal to make sure that they are fully aware and be able to ideally identify certain phishing links that they might receive and be able to report that to the in-house security personnel or support system. So, yeah, we look for it to be levied against all staff members.
Thank you.
And it is required to, you know, be annual, but if you feel that your firm should take training more often than that, we would highly encourage that.
All right. Thank you so much.
We got one more question.
Should be pretty easy. With ISSP plan, the Information System Security Policy, mm-hmm. Do you guys usually like to see that as a standalone document, or can that be embedded, for instance, in written supervised procedures or a BCP plan, like a business continuity plan document?
Basically, it depends on the size and your business operations. We've seen certain documentation related to ISSP that is very detailed. It's most likely for some of the smaller firms, we see it to be more detailed. However, for some of the larger firms, it actually is a very high-level description, and there is additional procedural documents and guidance documents that follows the policy that we will also look at as well.
We do see it. Like you said, it overlaps with a lot of other areas, so BCP and then our third-party procedures. So we do see that. It has to meet all requirements.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're now going to move into our last session for the day, which is record keeping and e-communications. If you want to just take a minute to stretch while we transition to that.